Now, on our last week of Pride Month, we take a look back at the history of drag here in Wisconsin. Our guest traces that history going back to the 1880s, with performances sometimes seen as seedy, even illegal, and in some eras as family-friendly entertainment. Michael Takash is a historian and co-host of the podcast Be Seen. He recently wrote an article for 88.9 Radio Milwaukee called Tracing the Roots of Wisconsin's Drag History Dating Back to the 1880s. He's the co-author of the book The History of Milwaukee Drag that's out today. Michael, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, it might seem surprising to a lot of people that the history of drag and drag performances goes back as far as it does. Do you get that surprised reaction often?
All the time. People think that the mainstreaming of drag has happened just since the launch of Drag Race in 2009, when in fact it's been much embedded in the culture and entertainment of Wisconsin for over 100 years prior.
Now, take us to the 1880s and this first recorded, you know, what we might think of as a drag show, I guess, in Wisconsin. What was that like?
Well, you have to understand that at the time, female impersonators were not on stages. They were not seen as entertainment in most cities. But the arrival of Francis Leon, who was billed as the only Leon because he had been so popular and famous from coast to coast and even to Australia that he inspired a legion of impersonators on his own. When he took the stage in Milwaukee, it was seen as a sign that the city was maturing culturally and that it was really becoming a place that attracted the arts and culture scene of larger cities. At the time, Milwaukee didn't have a city hall like it does now. It didn't have the Pabst Theater like it does now. City Hall Square was really a muddy, dirty intersection without paved streets, without public sewers, without indoor plumbing, without electric lighting. It was a very, very different place. So the arrival of this opera hall and, of course, of Francis Leon really was something special. And the Milwaukee Sentinel commented the next morning that that Leon could make a fool of a man if he didn't know it was a man. And most in the audience swore it was not a man, which is kind of hilarious in retrospect.
What made you want to share the history of drag performances and female impersonators in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee in particular?
Well, as a historian, it's really, you know, it's kind of an unexplored territory. And I mean, while I've done work on LGBTQ history, I've heard so many stories from contributors to the Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project and from friends and acquaintances about what was called the golden age of drag, which was this period from about 1981 to 1991, when drag shows in Milwaukee were so fiercely locked in competition that, I mean, production standards, talent, you know, the experience of going to a show were all through the roof. The cast were really treated as celebrities all over the state and traveled around the country performing. I mean, it was really a very unusual time. And, you know, hearing about this really inspired the book. Originally, we were just going to focus on that 10-year period. But upon doing more research and kind of looking back, you know, through the decades, it really became obvious that there's been about seven generations of drag in Milwaukee. And, you know, it's been continuous, whereas in other major cities of the world, drag was outlawed. It was banned. It was actually forbidden by law to perform in female attire or male attire if you were genetically female. So even that in itself is historically significant, but the stories and the progression and just this unfolding timeline is just really a fascinating story, even without the performers or the performances added on.
Yeah, as you share the timeline, it's really, there's this back and forth over the years in Milwaukee, and I'm guessing elsewhere, where this people viewed it as depraved, as you mentioned, maybe even outlawed it, to this is wholesome fun for the whole family. And I don't think I'm exaggerating, right?
No, you're not. No, I mean, prior to Francis Leon's arrival in Milwaukee in 1884, female impersonators existed, but they were seen only in what was called dime museums, which were kind of like a P.T. Barnum stationary circus rather than a traveling circus, where you could go and see all kinds of genetic curiosities under one roof for the price of a dime. And, you know, the female impersonator was seen as something like unusual, a curiosity, not a performer and not an artist, but just kind of like a, almost like, sad to say, almost like a freak show. And Francis Leon and his contemporaries really took that out of the dime museum and put them on stages, which continued through the vaudeville years. And by 1910, you know, the rise of national drag celebrities like Bert Savoy and Carl Norman and Julian Eltinge really changed, like, the whole concept of female impersonation. I mean, it was completely family friendly to go to an Orpheum vaudeville show with your, you know, your grandmother in the 19-teens and 1920s, simply because everyone knew it was a man pretending to be a woman, and the joke was, you know, not on the audience. There was no deception. There was no depravity. But over the years, that offstage, onstage separation kind of wore thin, and people started to feel that there was something wrong with female impersonators, that they would choose this life and this art. And, you know, some of the narrative we even see today politically is not new. It's pulled from those eras where drag was targeted as kind of like degenerate.
I wanted to ask you as we wrap up about today. I mean, we've got some people definitely viewing some kind of like drag show, drag performer readings as appropriate, family-friendly, kid-friendly fare. We have legislation in Florida advanced that would maybe take away kids from parents who brought their kids to a drag show, people showing up to protest just in the news in the last couple days with open firearms against a drag queen story hour. Both of those threads, the family-friendly view, the depravity view, really colliding these days.
Right. And I think I would really question, what does the child see? I mean, for a child in a drag queen story hour, they see somebody who's colorfully dressed, who's kind and gentle to them, reading them a story in kind of an adventurous way. I don't think they see depravity. I don't think they see a degenerate. They see someone interestingly dressed who maybe is not, you know, how anyone in their family or any of their friends dress. And that's the attraction. It's kind of that glamour. It's the art. It's the design. It's the costume. It's the experience. Certainly there are shows that are not for children. They are not happening in public libraries. They're happening at, you know, cabarets that are ticketed and adults only after, you know, a certain hour. But then there are also family-friendly, you know, brunches and dinners at places like Hamburger Mary's in Milwaukee, where, you know, the audience is well aware that they're not getting an X-rated show. And perhaps because of that, it's safe to bring their mom or their niece or their children. I think that it's a huge mistake to start targeting a legitimate form of entertainment that's been with us for, you know, seven generations, simply based on the morals of a snapshot in time.
Michael, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Michael Takash, author, historian, and co-host of the podcast Be Seen. His new book, co-authored, is The History of Milwaukee Drag.